Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week I'm here with Martin number one. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Well, I think probably like you, still suffering through this lovely heat wave.
Yeah, we've got at least another fortnight by looks of a weather forecast.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's very unusual. Memories of 1976, for those who were born then.
Yeah.
This week we have a guest, and we have another Martin, or rather a Marty. Marty Lons, who is from HPE. Now, Marty, I'm going to let you give your job title. You work in the, let's call it storage networking business, but I'll let you explain to everybody who you are and what you do for HPE.
Sure, Chris. Yes. So I'm responsible for our storage networking business as well as our interoperability business. So it's, think of it as all things connectivity for storage.
Excellent. So with that in mind, we thought it would be good, because I don't think we've actually talked about it yet on the podcast, we thought it would be good to have a look at storage networking and see where we are with it, because I think possibly, even though we've said it a few times, we could be in a transition. So we could be in the transition from moving from traditional fiber channel to much more of an Ethernet-based set of solutions. And by that, we don't necessarily just mean iSCSI, although that's one, but there's now a whole range of new technologies and new products all based on Ethernet. We thought it would be great just to sort of chew the cud, talk about some of those different technologies and see where we are with it. From that perspective, if you could just position for us, Marty, where we are with the sort of the mix of fiber channel and Ethernet, so we can understand exactly where we've gone and where we are at the moment, if you like.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks. Thank you again, Chris and Martin, for having me on. I'm just curious, was this the first time you ever had another Martin on?
Oh, yes, I think so.
I think it might be, actually, yeah. I think you're right. We've had plenty of Chris's, which is really confusing. And we used to have a guy called Gavin, and something happened to him, I have no idea, but we never see. I haven't seen him for years. But I think it's the first time we've had two Martins. Yeah.
Well, I'll take it as an honor and a privilege, regardless of my name, but thank you. It is great being here, and thanks for the opportunity. I think, you know, the question that you bring up is spot on right now. A lot of people, I think, we don't spend the time really understanding the storage network as much as we used to. I think that, you know, as a business, it's still a business that it's growing. It's actually diversifying into a lot of different areas, as we're going to talk about today. But from where it stands today, I think most people understand storage networking as fiber channel, right? It's been around for maybe 20 plus years, and I've been doing it for about 20 plus years. So, you know, I've been through the trials and tribulations of this, and what's fascinating and what's factual that people find fascinating is when I talk about storage, that when you throw facts out there, like storage today, if you think about from a protocol perspective, 80% of all storage is attached by Ethernet, right? And that usually takes people back a little bit. They say, well, wait a minute, isn't storage networking mostly a fiber channel business? And certainly it is when it comes to, you know, block storage, if you want to think of it that way. But when you start thinking about anything from vSANs to object to file and the growth in big data and so forth, that 80% represents a lot. And it's all Ethernet, since Fiber Channel is specifically focused on, you know, block storage. And they have had no intention of going outside, right? And considering all the consolidation in the market as of late, it looks to kind of stay that way, where we have this primary, I call primary storage, which is block storage, relational databases, if you want to think of it that way, which is Fiber Channel, and everything else falls into the Ethernet category in many different facets.
I agree with you that if you look at the percentages, that does make sense, of course. I mean, Martin, you've got a huge amount of NAS, so I guess from an Ethernet perspective, if you think about that, you are using a lot of Ethernet-based storage networking.
Yeah, we're probably about 50-50, though. So we've got a lot of NAS, but we've also got a lot of block, which we stick behind cluster file systems. So we still have a large amount of storage behind Fiber Channel. We do have a reducing number of ports, mind you. We are just consciously trying to reduce the number of Fiber Channel ports we actually consume, pushing them more and more across into Ethernet.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. But Marty, just going back to that then, if we look at the mix, a lot of what you described there is traditional Ethernet that probably would work across any Ethernet switch. But I guess we're starting to see a move towards newer Ethernet technologies. And in my ignorance, I'm going to pick, because I'm not a networking guy, I'm going to pick DCB or lossless Ethernet as the description of that. It seems to me that that's where the new stuff is coming along, certainly from the startups and so on.
Well, when you think of, you know, DCB, you know, data center bridging, right? It's having the capability of guaranteed delivery. And so when I think about, right, Ethernet storage and so forth, I think what's happening in the market, what you're seeing are customers are making, you know, really big investments in this, let's say, non-fiber channel storage. And so the weakest point typically in a lot of those areas is the network, because sometimes it's shared, sometimes it's dedicated, but it's not optimized. And so we see a large segment of the market kind of building here, this sort, what we're defining as a storage optimized fabric for Ethernet. And by doing so, you can make sure that, you know, products are DCB ready, so a switch or the protocol can, you know, support lossless technology. Because certainly when I think of Ethernet or when I think of fiber channel, there's really three characteristics on why we did it in the first place, you know, many years ago. One was the performance. One was for the fact that it was persistent, meaning it was lossless. And finally, it was secure. And those characteristics reside on Ethernet today. The question is, can you, you know, how do you pull those things out and leverage them in a standard storage environment? And that's what's going on. I see a lot of customers starting to do that today because of these significant investments in storage and how important data is as information becomes more of the lifeline of an organization.
Okay, so if we put the lossless features aside for a moment, we assume that, you know, that they're features that needed to be added. What else can we look at and say that Ethernet is adding or has got in its advantage compared to fiber channel? Could we look at it and say, is it performance? Is it other things? You know, because there must be more to that people are saying that they want to use Ethernet for, other than perhaps consolidation.
I think there's a few ways to look at it. And every organization is different. I think Martin will attest to this too. Sometimes you'll find that politics are a big part of how an organization decides what technology to run. Sometimes it's based on the application. Sometimes it's, you know, based on just preference. So you have all these different ways you can do it, because what the big answer, I think the answer what you're looking for is, you know, besides the fact that there was an inflection point with Ethernet and fiber channel, I'm going to say maybe 6 years ago, where Ethernet's surpassed, you know, fiber channel speeds. And so from a performance perspective, you know, we have 100 gig, we have 200 gigs today. And so it's not so much about the performance as it is more about latency. So you have the capability of losslessness, you have the performance, and you have the ability to be secure. You know, what are the characteristics then? What's driving Ethernet? And it's really ubiquity, right? I mean, if you think about a lot of customers and you think about how they want to simplify their data center, fiber channel is one other protocol. But I'll stress the fact that, you know, from a business perspective, we don't see fiber channel shrinking at all. It's actually, you know, it's still growing. It has this unique capability as a use case. And there's still nothing like it when it comes to, let's say, relational databases. And you'll, you know, I think, you know, we're always going to see fiber channel in our environments, like we're always going to see mainframes and so forth. And so I think what's happening with Ethernet, though, is just people are just learning on how good it can be, what it can do for your storage environment, regardless of what kind of storage profile you have, being block, object, file, what have you.
Okay, so I'm going to go to you, Martin, and ask you a question. Do you put separate Ethernet switches in for your networking? Are you using the technology that the network team would give you?
We use the technology of the network team. It gives us, Marty talks about politics, and there's always been politics between the storage team and the network team. And there's always been discussions about who should run the network. But as we move towards more Ethernet, we use the network team to do the Ethernet side of things. And as Marty says, I mean, there still is fiber channel, and we'll have fiber channel for an awful long time. And there may still be growth, but the growth will be, if you were to compare the curves between Ethernet growth and fiber channel growth, it's going to be a much shallower curve for fiber channel. And I suppose this has got some interesting impact as well. As Marty says, the ubiquity of it all means that Ethernet performance and speeds and feeds is beginning to outstrip fiber channel for a lot of things. So if you want raw sequential throughput, you're going to stick it down in Ethernet because you can get 100 gig or 200 gigabit. All these things are roadmapped now. So I think ubiquity, Ethernet wins out just because it's the biggest beast in the data center.
So are we saying that it's over then? The war between the storage team and the networking team is over and the networking guys won?
Is the war over? Yeah, we'll just play on their battlefield and they just get upset with us because they think we throw too much data around their end networks, but we just push it their way for a lot of these things.
We can just break their toys.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like good fun. So Marty, quick question here. While we're thinking about that, because I go back and think 6, 7, 8 years ago, we used to have something called Fiber Channel over Ethernet. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah, it's still around. I think, you know, there was a time, and it's cyclical, right? These technologies are cyclical, and with convergence was really big at the time, certainly from a consolidation perspective from storage and then converging, you know, multiple protocols on a single fabric. Fiber channel or Ethernet had a specific use case, right, in terms of being able to, you know, solve a lot of those problems. Now, the challenge from a cost perspective, you know, the total cost of ownership, when you start doing the math out, it didn't necessarily pan out the way I think most would like it to have to. Certainly in today's data centers, we still see FCOE being used at the server edge, you know, where it makes sense. And it's really a single use case. We don't really see it growing. It's really a technology where extreme dense data centers, let's say from a real estate perspective, still use the technology. But, you know, moving forward, you have things like NVMe, and that's, you know, really going to be the game changer. And today, customers are not necessarily implementing their NVMe solutions, but they're preparing for it and knowing that what they buy today has the investment protection to go down either path you wish, whether you're doing NVMe or RDMA over fiber channel, or you're doing it over fabrics.
From memory, I'm not 100% sure, but was Fibre Channel just a Cisco-pushed solution, or was it widely adopted across the whole of the industry?
Yeah, no, it was. It's been ratified, standards-based, right? And so everybody has it. I mean, well, everybody, there's really two Fibre Channel stacks in the market, right? It's really Cisco and Brocade, who was just recently bought by Broadcom. They both have FCOE solutions. Nobody, I don't think, you know, taking a look at it, we don't really push it so much, but there are customers that certainly use it.
Yeah, so Cisco have pushed it quite hard in the past as one of the solutions for UCS. That's what they've been very keen at, moving it into a top-of-rack type solution. But Marty, what do you think? There was also a problem with FCOE adoption, but it was in many ways too little too late. The way it was designed, and it gave you the fiber channel channels within the FCOE CNAs were almost too slow because you were limited by the bandwidth, the way you were splitting up those 10 gig links.
My experience with customers hasn't been a technology issue, but a cost issue. That when you start adding up the cost of an FCOE infrastructure, meaning, as you mentioned, right, you have to basically reserver or readapter your servers, right, with CNAs. And let's just say on average, it's almost twice the cost of an HBA. You know, a server comes with an Ethernet LAM already on board as part of the cost of the server. You may want to buy an HBA separately. And those costs are significantly, you know, it's much cheaper than it would be saying trying to do an FCOE solution from end to end. That's why it's funny, right? The only place we really see it is at the server edge because of, let's say, where you need to consolidate down because of, let's say, high cost of real estate. But again, those are not everywhere. It's not it's not a technology issue. I think it's just an ROI issue, or rather a TCO issue.
So quickly touching on the TCO issue, what do we think the cloud providers are doing? I bet there's no fiber channel in any of the large cloud providers. I'd imagine they're all Ethernet and always have been.
Depends on who you ask, but I think the reality behind that is you're correct that, you know, most of these, at least the tier one cloud providers, you know, they typically run Ethernet-based storage, right? And so even for their, let's say, relational database applications and so forth, it's just they can afford to do things, they can architect things a little differently, and you'll find, you know, more iSCSI up there than you would traditionally find Fibre Channel.
I would have thought the only place we're going to see Fibre Channel in some of those large cloud providers is, weirdly enough, my favorite technology, Chris.
Oracle.
Tape connectivity.
Oh, tape connectivity.
Yeah, most people have small fiber channel SANs for their tape environment.
Yeah, good point. Sorry, I thought you were going to say Oracle, because the way Oracle are building their cloud, it strikes me that they're trying to build an enterprise data center in the cloud, and fiber channel would probably be one of the things they put in. But hey, that's a discussion for another day. Okay, so FCOE, we'll just sort of put that to the side. And I think you touched very briefly on it, or at least you touched on the new technology side of things, Marty, and that's the idea of NVMe. NVMe is without a doubt flavor of the month in terms of technology in the storage industry, both from a protocol for connecting devices within a server or within a storage device, but also as a networking protocol. And there are clearly two routes we're seeing things go. There's fiber channel NVMe, or FCM NVMe, ratified by one standards body. And then there's NVMe over fabrics, which to a certain degree seems to encompass a whole range of things. Do you want to just talk us through that a little bit?
This is much different than other types of converged opportunities like FCOE, because there's a fundamental difference here relative to the disk, right? When fiber channel, or even the SCSI stack, I guess is the best way to think of it, was designed based on, you know, disk specifications on SCSI. And so you have, you know, a match, right, in terms of how the protocol works relative to the connectivity, relative to the disk or where you store things. Now, NVMe, think of it, it's a whole new protocol designed for flash, right? And so what now you start asking, customers start asking themselves questions, as I transition to, let's say, a flash-based data center or non-volatile memory-based data center, how do I position the connectivity? And as you mentioned, there's two ways to look at it. You can do RDMA over fiber channel, or NVMe over fiber channel, which allows you to leverage your existing fiber channel fabric, if that's what you have today, and reap the benefits of RDMA, meaning, you know, get the benefits on an ultra low latency, extremely high performing fabric. on the other side of the spectrum, they're the folks that have been, I guess, waiting all this time to say, you know, from an Ethernet perspective, we can now have something that basically rivals what Fibre Channel can do. And you've got that whole RDMA over fabrics or NVMe over fabrics. And again, there's a whole list of ways you can do that. But the one you may want to think of, or the one that is, seems to be most dominant, is around Rocky 2. And what gives you there is the possibility of taking advantage of your new flash over an Ethernet infrastructure, over a converged infrastructure or a converged fabric. So two different ways to look at it, but similar benefits, just that one is using, depending on which infrastructure you have, you can definitely leverage, you know, if you're a Fibre Channel, you'll have an answer for that. If you're Ethernet, you'll have an answer for that. So the good news is there is no wrong way to go here. Both protocols are committed to in terms of how it's going to be run. And we're just, you know, waiting for all the standards to kind of roll out. But you start to see customers today, what I see when I talk to customers, they're making their bets in terms of they want to keep their investment protection and run it over Fibre Channel today. Or, you know, some folks have been waiting for this Ethernet moment. So again, not a technology discussion, but one more of cost and, you know, training. And again, it goes back to politics, right? Does the infrastructure already have a Fibre Channel skill set? In that case, that transition is very easy. If it's one where they want to make a transition to Ethernet or to the network group, that can be done easily. So I think, you know, looking at each customer, it's a unique situation, but you're talking about the money involved with putting in this new infrastructure, the politics involved within any organization, and of course, the skill set.
You're pretty much saying that it's not necessarily clear cut that one technology is being treated as better than another. It's more a case at this point that customers have options and other factors of influencing that option choice. And as you said, it could be something like, well, all of our team are very, very familiar with Fibre Channel. And it's going to take a long time to retrain. We'll stay with it. But in that instance, if somebody was putting in a new infrastructure within their data center, are you seeing people saying this might be the opportunity to move away from Fibre Channel and we'll legacy the Fibre Channel into the old environment and the new one we build that will make Ethernet?
Absolutely. And that's a very fair statement. And I think that's a decision a lot of customers will be doing.
Okay. I mean, you said, Martin, we'll go back to what you said earlier. You think you're reducing the number of Fibre Channel ports you're holding?
Yeah, we are. I mean, for all kinds of reasons for that. I mean, for instance, you have things that have technologies like vSAN, which means obviously the backend for that is generally Ethernet. So we're reducing the number of traditional block storage arrays, which will have a Fibre Channel impact. And then also, even if we have traditional Fibre Channel arrays behind a virtualized platform, we're consolidating there anyway. So the number of Fibre Channel ports we're putting in is shrinking. I don't see the need for some of these very big switches, certainly even in a relatively large environment like my own.
So Martin, just to touch back on that one again, is that partly because the speed of Fibre Channel is a lot higher and that you, for example, might be putting in virtualized environments where a server leads fewer ports because there's a lot of consolidation and they're faster? Is that part of it? Or is it just generally because you just want to try and avoid the expense of it?
Well, to simplify it, so you want to avoid the expense. And you talk about Fibre Channel now being faster. Yeah, it is faster. But often, even if you look on a traditionally physically attached device, non-virtualized, we're not pushing the Fibre Channel protocol at all from a speed point of view, generally in a lot of storage environments. So the fact that it's now 32 gig doesn't really matter to most of us. We're just not transferring that kind of data.
Okay, let's touch on that actually now, because we talked about the speed of the products. Let's talk about that, Marty, in a bit more detail, because typically if you look at the technologies that we used to have, and I'll go back to my old school Fibre Channel days, and you said you've been in the industry for about 20 years. I think I was using Fibre Channel around, I don't know, 2000, 2001, I think. And at the time, I think we had departmental switches, and then we went on to directors, and there was a real push to consolidate as much as possible and try and build these incredibly crazy fabrics with thousands of ports in. Are we still going down that route, or do we now have things like top of rack switches like Martin was talking about? How's the form factor sort of changed in that instance?
You know, Chris, when you're, I have to do the math every time I say that, now that you, I hear you say it back to me as far as how long have I been doing it. And I think, yeah, when I was, let's see, I was at EMC in the same role, right? In the same kind of capacity I have here at HP. So, which is funny because I keep, you never notice you have to go back and I have to add the years up. Maybe it was longer than 20 years, but nonetheless, it's to your point around, you know, what's the form factor look like today? It really, and I hate to use the term, you know, it varies by customer because there's new trends happening with, you know, intelligence to the edge, right? Think of IoT and those things. And so you want to have the data locally, you want to do the analytics locally because the performance is a lot better. And so customers, or depending on how their data centers are architected, will determine what form factor device they typically get. So if they're in a more of a, let's say, a distributed type data center and pushing everything to the edge, you'll see, you know, the TORs or what I call fixed port switches are more of a, you know, a big push out there because they don't want to have, you know, the cost of a director, nor will they use the ports. And so the port count on directors is still, you know, relatively high. And you'll find those things in more of a consolidated environment where they're pushing everything to the middle, having a centralized data center look. And so it varies. I think what you'll see today is a trend more towards those TORs, more towards those fixed port switches, because the trend in the technology and the architecture is to the edge. So we do see that happening, yes.
Okay. I've got a question which suddenly comes to mind on that, and you may or may not know the answer, but if we look at the software-defined networking world, there's definitely a case of saying we want centralized management and we want to be able to push out configuration to those devices wherever they are, rather than have to log in and configure each one. Are we seeing an equivalent storage-defined networking approach happening with storage networking? Does that exist at all?
Not in the, I guess, in the definition of software defined, but we do have different ways we solve that today. And I'll mention one, if it's okay to do a shameless plug with Hewlett Packard. We have, you know, we've built a, what I call orchestration, an orchestration model from a software perspective that allows you to do target-based or storage-based orchestration of your environment. It basically gives you this whole software defined without having to, you know, really do software defined, meaning being able to manage all the configurations of these devices, regardless of where they are from a central repository, from the storage device. You know, you have these customers that, you know, you look at the features that you have to do for a switch in terms of managing it. And there's not a ton of things you have to do with it, but there are administrative tasks that have to happen there. If you can eliminate those manual tasks, it makes life a lot easier. And since if you can take a human out of it, it limits the errors as well. So having these kind of, you know, this kind of software coming from the array, knowing that, you know, the array is, let's say, is correct in terms of what the decisions it makes, having the fabric listen to what the array is doing is, you know, in real time, gives you the ability to do some amazing features. So I guess software defined, not in the true sense of it, but having the ability to orchestrate and automate all these features from a switch, from a storage array is where, you know, what we've built. And we find the customers really enjoy, because it's one less variable that they have to worry about, meaning the storage network.
And what's the name of that product?
Well, for Fibre Channel, we call it Smart SAN. And for Ethernet, we call it Smart Fabric. And that gives the ability, it's funny, right? We had to innovate a lot of the technology for Ethernet because it didn't exist. So things like zoning that people are familiar with on Fibre Channel, you know, you don't have that on Ethernet. And so creating this Ether zoning technology for our Smart Fabric product gives the ability to, you know, to cut over from protocol to protocol, so customers can make decisions based on technology, not based on politics or what have you. So they can pick the right protocol based on the application need. And hopefully, right, over time, we can start to eliminate the politics and let the customers decide on, you know, fabrics are irrelevant, the protocols are irrelevant. Just pick, you know, what makes the most sense based on your application needs.
Right. So it sounds like you're saying a bit of harmonization there in the way that the standards of the different technologies actually work. So people feel comfortable that, for instance, the same level of security is applied on both Ethernet and Fibre Channel in things like zoning.
Right. We have to make it invisible. Right. And that's what we're doing. The goal is to, you know, eliminate all the things that you see and just understand that you're getting what it is that you're used to getting from Fibre Channel. So if without having to go into, you know, your CLI interface on an Ethernet switch, if it's already built into the product and it gets treated like a Fibre Channel switch, it's less threatening to a, let's say, a storage buyer who would, you know, normally buy Fibre Channel originally because that's what they're used to doing. So as long as, you know, if we can, you know, create this abstraction layer of features and just all the, you know, all the dirty work underneath it, you don't see all that. It makes this whole political aspect a lot easier to deal with within an organization.
So let's talk about the future for customers then. I think we've touched on it, and we're probably re-emphasizing things we've already said. But if I was a customer today, would it make sense to be absolutely trying to move away from Fibre Channel? Or do we think there's long enough life in Fibre Channel not to have to panic at this stage?
I've always said that the Fibre Channel will outlive myself, certainly. This is a protocol that has a specific use case, and it's really good at it. And so I don't think you're ever going to see some of these OLTP applications move to other protocols necessarily, because Fibre Channel, it's designed and purpose-built for that, you know, for that one reason. And so when you think of, I don't know, like heavy transactional applications, like maybe an airline ticket agency or stock trading in a financial market and so forth, there's no better protocol today than Fibre Channel for it. And so, you know, on the other side of things, on Ethernet, again, the ubiquity gives you so much more flexibility to do all these different things. It has a certain use case there and what it specializes in. But there's no, I don't believe there's going to be a wrong answer in terms of what you decide, in terms of what you pick. It's based on your needs. And from what I've seen, you know, working with all the vendors, you know, within the ecosystem, whether it's on the switching side, the adapter side, there are large investments being made to Fibre Channel. They continue to be large investments made to Fibre Channel. So I wouldn't worry about that going away anytime soon.
As we sort of come towards the end of our time, I'm going to ask you the obvious question, and that's, where does the technology go next? What should we expect? Should we expect completely converged solutions that run Fibre Channel and Ethernet on the same physical hardware, completely ubiquitously, where you can, through software, just change the protocol? Where do you think the most obvious thing is going forward?
Based on our roadmaps, you know, from the industry, you will have the ability to run this converged environment. Whether customers do it or not, I think will depend on the politics. So you can expect to find fully automated, orchestrated fabrics for storage today, right? And so now when we start coming out with NVMe solutions, putting it over NVMe, having, whether it's Fibre Channel, whether it's iSCSI, whether it's NVMe, you know, regardless of what you pick, if it all looks and can run, you know, seamlessly on the same kind of fabric via software, that's where we're going next. And, you know, having the ability to do a converged environment will be there. But like I said, I think it really depends on the old age of customers, you know, how comfortable they will be because of the politics involved in it.
Well, that was great, Marty. Thanks very much for taking the time and being on the podcast and talking to us. I don't know, Martin, from my perspective, I can think of a million and one avenues and questions that we could end up going down, whether it's from the management or performance monitoring or the individual specifics of the technology. There's a huge amount of stuff here that we haven't really had the opportunity to go into in detail, but this definitely gives us a starting point.
Oh, yeah. So I think in the back of my mind, when you're talking to any storage admin these days, there is a question about, which is Fibre Channel dead? And I think with the conversation with Marty has shown that Fibre Channel is not dead. It may arguably start to become undead at some point, and it will just carry on for forever and a day without massive amounts of innovation. But we will see it become more and more automated. I mean, automation in the Fibre Channel space has been around for some time, so I would expect to see more. There's been work being done within OpenStack, with the Cinder zoning plugins. So it's certainly a protocol which is going to be around for a long time.
Okay, so Marty, if people want to find you online, do you use Twitter? Can they find you on the Twitters? Or where could they go, for instance, at HPE to find more information about your storage networking technologies?
I don't tweet too much, but certainly you can find me at hpe.com under, you know, in storage networking. We do a bi-weekly, depending on how good we are with our blogging, as far as updates to what's going on in the industry. Sometimes it's product related, sometimes not, but that's the best place to get a hold of me, or at marty.lands@hpe.com.
That's great. Well, thanks very much for joining us. And for everybody out there listening, as usual, you can find more details on the website at storageunpacked.com. You can find us at Storage Unpacked on Twitter, and you can search for us on LinkedIn. If you just search for Storage Unpacked in LinkedIn groups, you'll find us that way. So Martin, Marty, thanks for joining us, and catch up next time.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.
Cheers, Chris.